love, everybody. Ringo here. Beautiful day in LA. Talk. So, it was good to be able to kind of get it out in a song.
The whole, you know, origin of where we're all coming from.
I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
And welcome to Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. This is a bi-weekly show that we do live right here on Facebook every 2 weeks. And on most of our shows, we talk about the solo careers and music of the Beatles. On this particular show, because of a special release on the White Album, we're going to continue with more of our conversation on the White Album with my other co-hosts. I'm Ken Michaels. Hopefully you know me for a few other Beatles programs that are on the air, including a syndicated radio show that I do called Every Little Thing. And I'm also part of another podcast show called Things We Said Today. So you might know me for those two shows. And right now I'd like to welcome two of my three other regular co-hosts of the show. So let's see who pops up on the screen right now. We have Kit O'Toole. And
hello, Ken.
You know Kit for a few books that she's written, songs we were singing, guided tours of the Beatles' lesser-known works, also Michael Jackson FAQ. She has also entered the world in many ways as a broadcaster because she does a show called Bottomless Soul, which is once a month right now on, what is the name of the channel?
Bumps Radio England.
That's right. And she's also the author of many articles that you've seen online, Deep Beatles, Deep Soul. And welcome to the show, Kit.
Thank you very much, Ken. And hello, everybody. Good to see you all.
We had a great show last time out with part one of our discussion of the White Album. So we're going to continue with more of this new box set that came out. So why don't we bring on our other co-host?
All right, here he comes. There he is.
And that's our very own Tom Hunyadi. You know, Tom, for a podcast show that he does on the solo career of Paul McCartney called Two Legs, that he co-hosts with his cousin, David Gargolino. Welcome, Tom.
Hello, Ken. Hello, Kit. And let me get my little bow in there for you. And hope everybody's doing well out there. And 2.5 more days until Friday, and we get our next two box sets. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's been slow lately, hasn't it? You know, one box set a month.
These releases are really coming slow lately. Yeah.
I feel like we need to thank Apple and Paul and John Lennon Estate. I mean, haven't slowed down with topics at all. they've made
no
this
lack
very
of material.
Easy.
No lack of material at all here. Well, like I said, on the show today, we're going to continue with more of our conversation on the White Album. Before we do that, also, we must mention that our other co-host, Ken Womack, couldn't be here tonight, but of course he is here with us in spirit. He's going to be back with us on our next show. And the rest of us were talking, and we are, as you can imagine, excited about bringing you this show every 2 weeks. And a big concern of us has been that we'd like to be able to consistently broadcast this show live every 2 weeks, the same time. And it's been difficult for us to do that, but we've come up with a specific time in which we'd like to continue to do this. And it's going to start a week from this Monday. We're going to be doing this show every other Monday at 9 p.m. And that will be Eastern Standard Time. We're going to do our best to make sure every time it's in that time slot because, you know, it's an exciting thing to do a show that's live. It's kind of like a dying art these days to have live broadcasts on the air, whether you're talking about on television or on radio. And so we're very excited about this way of presenting the show and doing it live. And I know that for some of you who want to catch this show live, if we keep bouncing around from every couple of weeks to a different day, it makes it difficult to remember. So we're going to try our best to make sure that it's every 2 weeks on Monday. So the next show that we're going to do after this one is going to be on December the 17th. Again, that's at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you see our post, by the way, on Facebook, sometimes there might be confusion because in our messages, we say that it's Eastern Standard Time. For some reason right now, we got to get this straightened out. Underneath our logo, it says CST, Central Time. That's wrong. It's always Eastern Standard Time. So if you go every 2 weeks, that would mean the next show after that would be New Year's Eve. I don't think you want to see what we look like on New Year's Eve. So we're going to do it the following week. We'll take that week off. But after that, it'll be every 2 weeks, Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right?
All right. Yes.
So what we try to do on all of our shows is to present you with the latest Beatle news. And so I thought that I would mention some of the latest news items in the last 2 weeks. And if you guys want to chime in and add anything to it, or maybe there might be a news item that you heard about that I didn't mention, feel free to. First of all, it was announced today that Paul McCartney has added a couple of new dates in the U.S. for his Freshen Up tour. There's one at Lambeau Field, which is in Green Bay, Wisconsin. That's on June the 8th. And Globe Life Park, and that's in Arlington, Texas, on June the 14th. So far, Paul's U.S. dates start May the 23rd in New Orleans, Louisiana. And his last date, as of this moment, on December 4th, is June the 26th in Phoenix, Arizona. So far, he has 10 dates in the U.S. And you could always check Paul's website, paulmccartney.com, for the latest up-to-date information, because it could change on a dime. And you know that. Any comments, guys? Paul adding new dates?
Well, I was wondering, excuse me, how long this tour is going to be, because he's been doing, for obvious reasons, these shorter kind of tours. And so it'll be interesting. One thing that I haven't heard yet is Chicago. And it was strange because there was an announcement a while back where he was sort of teasing that there could be a Chicago date, and then nothing happened. But so I'm wondering if there are going to be even more dates added. I'm going to the Madison show, but if he doesn't come to Chicago, I won't be crushed, but still.
Well, as I'm sure you know, dates for Paul always trickle out a little bit at a time. Right. And a very common thing these days, this applies to all artists, when the dates are announced, sometimes it's not very long before they go on sale. So if you hear about it, don't be surprised if within a week or 2 weeks they go on sale. So you have to be aware of that.
Very true.
And that could be for shows that happen a half a year from now to a year. I bought Jeff Lynne tickets 9 months before the concert, that's just how it is these days. Also, Paul announced he'll be doing 4 concerts in South America in March. They'll be in Chile, Argentina, and Brazil.
Back in Brazil.
He's got to do that there.
Of course.
He does.
All right. Also, Paul has agreed to play his first show in Ireland in nearly 10 years, and this is actually going to be a charity concert. He'll be raising money for the homeless. This is for an exclusive concert at Vicar Street in Dublin. And the last time that Paul played in Ireland was in December of 2009 at the O2 Arena there. And Paul was inspired to do this because of a plaque that was unveiled commemorating 2 shows the Beatles did at the Adelphi Cinema on Middle Abbey Street, November 7th, 1963. So instead of selling tickets, guests will be asked for donations, and proceeds will benefit the homeless. And no date has been set for this yet. Paul is continuing his shows this week. He does have a show in Vienna on December the 12th is the Echo Arena in Liverpool. That should be exciting. December 14th in Glasgow, Scotland, and December 16th at the O2 Arena in London. And he is doing some dates this week in Vienna. Okay. Lots of news about Ringo. He gave an interview to Howard Stern. He was on the show with Joe Walsh, and he revealed that he is working on a new album. He and Joe are writing a song together, and some of the lyrics are, "You got to get up to get down." That sounds like a Ringo line.
It does.
So that's exciting news. Ringo just continues to record, regardless of how well his records do. He's doing it for the love of recording and for creating. And just for that, you know, I think we should applaud him for that. When and if that album comes out, it would mark his 20th studio album, which is pretty remarkable. So Ringo's co-producer, Bruce Sugar, posted a photo of Ringo with Steve Lukather in the studio, with Steve holding up his copy of his White Album CD. Also, Ringo and wife Barbara and Olivia Harrison arrived on the red carpet at the annual UNICEF Snowflake Ball. And Ringo was honored with the George Harrison Humanitarian Award. Ringo has made a video in which he's asking fans to make a donation to UNICEF, since this was a cause that was very important to George, going back to the concert for Bangladesh. And if you'd like to make a donation, you can go to this website, UNICEF USA, and type in /Ringo and make a donation there. Also, a couple things. Paul and Ringo both got to see Bob Dylan in concert at the Beacon Theater in New York City, but they were on separate occasions, two different concerts. And so that's exciting, you know, Paul and Ringo showing their support for Bob. Kind of wish that they would have appeared on stage with him. That would have really have been nice. And Ringo tweeted, "Thanks for a great night. Bob Dylan at the Beacon. Rock on, peace and love." You may have heard about a new documentary on the Imagine album, which actually was shown in England on television on their Channel 4. It's called John and Yoko, Above Us Only Sky. And it's on the making of the album, kind of like Gimme Some Truth was. But this is a brand new documentary. And it includes, I've only seen the trailer for this, Klaus Voormann, David A. Ross from the Everson Museum of Art, Elliot Mintz, and Julian Lennon. So I'm excited about this, although I was wondering when I heard about this a few weeks ago, why wasn't this part of the releases here in the U.S. when the whole onslaught of Imagine products came out? Would have been really nice to see that, although no doubt about it, that DVD Blu-ray of Imagine and Give Me Some Truth was so nice to be packaged together. But from what I've been told from Alan Kozin, from Things We Said Today, we talked about this. He got to see this documentary. It's got a lot of interviews with people who are in that new John and Yoko book who were involved with the album, and also people that worked with the Lennons at that time, only their new interviews. And so there's the possibility that it may come out here on DVD and Blu-ray, and possibly maybe a PBS broadcast.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to ask. Are there any plans for, you know, showing this in the U.S.? Because I've been hearing or reading stuff on Facebook from people who have seen it, who said it's very good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, you know, and it's got more studio footage of John with all the musicians that worked on Imagine. And Eagle Rock Entertainment is supposed to be involved with this. And they're the same company that put out Imagine and Give Me Some Truth. So that leads me to believe that hopefully we'll get a DVD and Blu-ray out of that. A few more things. Just released is an album of jazz cover versions of songs from the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album. It's called A Day in the Life, Impressions of Pepper.
There we go. There it is.
It's on... thank you. Thank you, Tom. On the Verve label, and there's 12 contemporary jazz artists all covering songs from Sgt. Pepper. I take it you've heard it?
First side. But what label did you say it was on?
I'm told it's on Verve.
Well, here it's Impulse. I don't know if you can see that, but Impulse is a, and this is more of jazz covers of the Sgt. Pepper album, but Impulse is pretty much a home of jazz musicians, mainly made popular by John Coltrane in the mid to late 60s. Okay. So a lot of his stuff was released on Impulse. So I mean, whether or not, you know, Verve bought Impulse and it's you know, they're distributing it. I don't know. I've got to look more into it. But yeah, that's interesting you say that, because it's clearly states Impulse Records on the side.
Huh.
Okay. Well, the article that I read mentioned Verve.
Okay.
Maybe they're the parent company or something.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Also, since we're dealing with Miss Soul over here, as part of our broadcast, not just the queen of Beatlesmania.
Right.
Lady Supreme, Diana Ross, was in the Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York City, and she sang Wonderful Christmas Time.
Mm.
And she actually recorded this song back in 1994, and she's just released a new compilation, which is called Wonderful Christmas Time. That's what it's called, the album itself. And there's a new mix of the song from her. Also on that album, she covers Happy Christmas.
Wow. Okay. I got to pick that up. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm.
And finally, Paul recognized Record Store Day, and he released a limited edition 7-inch vinyl.
There it is.
Come On to Me, and I Don't Know. And so I've been told that copies of the single are numbered. Is that true? Is yours numbered?
Yeah. Mine, I got a couple, and they are both numbered. However, I was hearing that other countries, their copies were not numbered. So I found that quite interesting. So maybe there's actually more than 5,600 more than what we thought. So.
Okay. Very good. And you collect all this stuff, Tom.
Don't remind me, please.
Yep, Tom is the king of collecting this stuff and the king of Blu-ray.
Ah, very good.
As he always tells us about Blu-ray, because neither of us have it yet.
Right.
Well, sometime in the future, when our technology for this show is more sophisticated, we'll have to pan around your room there and see your whole collection.
Yes.
That would be nice.
When it's clean.
We'll give you advance warning.
There you go.
Okay.
Despite the
warning. Oh, there you go. Okay. There's a... Wow. My goodness.
That's just a quarter of it.
Oh, wow.
That looks pretty organized to me.
Yeah.
All right. So on our last show, we talked about the Beatles White Album box set, which came out November the 5th. So many goodies on there, the remix of the album, the issue demos, three whole discs of outtakes. And so I thought we'd talk mainly about the outtakes, but you guys can talk about anything you want. If there's anything we didn't discuss in our last show, maybe something you forgot to bring up. But I thought that I would start just by talking about the outtakes and find out from each of you, were you extremely pleased with what you got on these discs? Were you very happy with most of the takes? And in particular, what were the highlights for you? So why don't we start with you, Kit?
Well, I mean, I thought that the outtakes, many of them were fascinating. Now, some of them I had heard, and I'm sure many of our viewers too had heard before, but on really crappy quality, you know, copies of copies of copies of cassettes. I mean, you know, so it is so nice to have, you know, some of the, like Not Guilty or something, you know, excuse me, in a nice clean copy, and really noticed things I'd never noticed before. And I'll tell you, we talked about this the last time a bit, but I have to, I think, reiterate this, that I never thought that Good Night would be one of the tracks that would benefit most from this box set. I mean, what a surprise, because I will be completely honest, and I'm sure people watching will be throwing virtual tomatoes at me, but, you know, it's never been one of my favorite songs. You know, it just hasn't. But I really learned to appreciate it more on this set, you know, with like the outtake of Ringo singing it with George Martin on piano, you know, without a lot of the, you know, it was more of a sparse arrangement, and I really appreciated the melody more, you know, and of course the one that everybody's talking about, the outtake with the Beatles singing harmony, which I think if that had, you know, it needed some work, you know, some of the harmony, but had they really worked on it, that could have been you know, beautiful too. I just, that was the real shocker for me of this whole set was how Goodnight benefited, and from the remix too. I think it's a beautiful, you know, beautiful remix as well. Really brings out the gorgeous string arrangement. So, sure. But the outtakes, and Goodnight being one of them, I just have always found it fascinating to listen to how a song develops, you know, and it this is just a fly on the wall kind of experience, and I really enjoyed it.
Mm. Well, Goodnight for me, you know, there's so many great Beatles songs.
Yeah.
We can spend hours and hours talking about what our favorites are, what we think are the best songs. But Goodnight is not only a gorgeous song, I always thought it had a great melody to it. Mm-hmm. But in particular, that arrangement from George Martin, that orchestration was so beautiful and so perfect for that song. And I think that Ringo's voice blended so well with the orchestration that I think that's what made it work. And and it set the stage for other recordings that Ringo did in his solo career in particular. Mm-hmm. I always think about Easier for Me, the Harry Nilsson mm-hmm. song from Goodnight Vienna, which has that kind of feel to it, just Ringo's vocals with an orchestra. But yeah, these outtakes are really nice. The thing about the take you were talking about, Kit, with just Ringo with a piano, mm-hmm. We got a taste of that on the Beatles anthology.
Yeah.
And it was crossfaded into the Beatles release version. But here you get the whole thing. And it's beautiful just as yes. it is. But yeah, it was a big shock to hear all the Beatles harmonizing on that. And you know, you kind of wish they worked on it more together. But you know, the release version was always perfect to me. mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
How right. about some other surprises? Kit.
Oh my gosh. I loved Cry Baby Cry. I thought that, you know, that slow blues version. I just, you know, that was great too. I mean, in a way they could have gone with that take as well. And I the other thing too is I, you know, on so many of the cuts like Revolution, actually Revolution 1, but really the single Revolution. Uh-huh. You know, people have said so many times, you know, about, oh, you know, the Beatles were at odds during the White Album. We talked about this a little bit the last episode. But, I mean, the band was just on point, you know. They just were playing. They were such a tight unit. Mm-hmm. Birthday. I mean, hearing the just the instrumental backing of Birthday and hearing, you know, I assume Paul yelling in the background and, you know, trying to get everybody going. And I mean, and they just were absolutely, as I said, just, you know, blended so well together. They worked so well together. And so to me, this box set, you know, also shatters that myth. I mean, it did kind of for me that the Beatles were working together a lot more than, you know, than has been previously reported. And I think this set proves it, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, there's so many comments that have been said from the people involved with the White Album that you can have endless conversations as to whether or not you think the Beatles were cohesive at the time as a unit. Were they splintering apart? You know, you've got so many different comments from the Beatles themselves and the people around them. But one thing I just want to bounce off of what you just said there, Kit, mm-hmm. one thing that I appreciate more and more is when you hear the backing tracks on some of these songs, because, you know, I hate to admit this, but at least half the time when I listen to Beatles music, I'm singing along with it to the point where I'm not paying attention as much to what the band's doing as musicians. And when you remove the lead vocals or any of the vocals and you hear Savoy Truffle, you know, the way that it yeah. is, or even in the case of Your Blues, which on this box set, on the outtakes, John's vocals are distant, but you hear the band.
Yeah.
Man, they're cooking. They yeah. really are cooking as a band. They really are a great live band in the studio. Tom, let's get your perspective on some of these highlights.
Yeah, well, cool. You know, George Harrison has said, and Danny has reiterated that, you know, he doesn't like to feel like he's scraping the bottom of the barrel to, you know, for these releases. But I say if these releases sound this good, I say keep scraping that bottom of the barrel, because a lot of this stuff is very enjoyable. And how these, you know, George Martin has said, you know, I don't understand why people would want to listen to these demos, but these are fabulous. I mean, we've talked about it last week, the evolution of a song, the process of hearing the song starting from the Easter demo and then finally hearing that finished product when the White Album was released. I mean, I think that's fascinating stuff. You know, I think of stuff like, hey, who would have known that Let It Be started in during the White Album sessions? And then here it is. I mean, this is a wonderful piece where, you know, you hear him say, you know, Brother Malcolm instead of Mother Mary. And then here's the, you know, the beginning of a song that everybody cherishes. And, you know, why wouldn't you want to hear that? You know, I mean, I don't understand why, you know, nobody, you know, thought about releasing this unless they, you know, it just came up and they just discovered it. But my favorite disc on this set is CD6 and the whole, you know, I Will sessions. And it was recorded during, you know, the September 6th. I've also, you know, looked in the, you know, the Lewison recording book to see, you know, if some of the liner notes in the book matched, you know, his notes, you know, and it's going to be interesting to see if all of that stuff ties in together. But yeah, I mean, with Ringo, Paul and George doing those sessions with, you know, I Will, you get a couple takes of that. And then you get Step Inside Love, which he did for, you know, Cecily's TV show. And then you get Lost Paranoia, you know, and Blue Moon. You know, Paul's vocals are so smooth, you know, during that whole, you know, 4 or 5 long run. And then, you know, you go back and then you listen to them screaming on Helter Skelter. It's really amazing, you know, his vocal range and, you know, and all of them as well. You know, John or George's Long, 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 I thought, take – oh, what take was it? Take 44.
Right.
You know, and he's got the first couple verses, but then he's, you know, playing around with words, you know, for the third verse. And that was really funny.
He was laughing through it.
This is something humor that they've all had. You know, you hear a lot of banter and you hear a lot of laughing and good times during these demos. And that's one of the things that I really love about this set. Happiness is a Warm Gun. I mean, you know, on CD6 as well. I believe that was take 19. And you can just see her, you know, the walkthrough, and it is slowly coming together by take 19. It's you know, it's finally taking shape into the three sections. You don't have that guitar, bluesy guitar solo right before the second part, but you get a sense of they're going in the right direction. John knows what he wants, and you know, it's finally all starting to come together. Another one I love is I'm So Tired, take 14. You know, John's vocals throughout there. And then, you know, you hear a solo guitar throughout the verse. I don't know if that's John or George playing. I'll have to read more on that. And then there you get, during the first verse, you get this harmonies of, you know, while he's singing. Right. I mean, that's, you know, that's really cool too, that they were experimenting with these different, you know, harmonies and chords and, you know, while they're, you know, under all this pressure to, one, get this album done, and then all the pressure of being businessmen as well. But here they are, they're still taking the time to experiment and have fun while recording this album. And, you know, those are just, you know, a few of the, you know, highlights for me. Obviously, the whole thing package, I'd probably say 85% of it is a highlight for me. You know, there's a little downer, I think, but that's okay. I mean, you're not going to enjoy, I don't think you can enjoy everything that's released, but it's definitely well worth the money, in my opinion. I think you definitely get, you know, your money's worth, you know, from what you have here. The only down thing I think is there's no video content of anything. You know,
that's true.
Even though they gave us Revolution and Hey Jude on the, you know, the Beatles One Plus set that came out a few years ago, I mean, you gotta believe that there was more video footage, you know, recorded. I mean, especially to take a look at the anthology, you see a video of Paul doing Blackbird.
Right.
You
know, a lot of people pointed that out that should have been there.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So maybe they felt there wasn't enough to fill a DVD. Probably they thought that, maybe. Who knows?
Okay. Well, then there was more than one version of Revolution film for the promotional film.
Absolutely. Many Hey Jude's.
You could have added the Lady Madonna if you wanted to, you know. So there was, I think you could have probably got an hour's worth of material.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Now we have an interesting comment here that kind of dovetails with we've just been talking about from our friend Mean Mr. Mayo. Hello there.
Hey, Mr. Mayo.
Hey, Mr. Mayo. We love your channel. And so he says, ever since Love, I feel they're sugarcoating the Beatles. White Album was tense, the Fab said. Yeah, I mean, I definitely, when I talk about that the box set is busting a lot of myths, I don't mean that I don't think they fought at all. Of course they did. You know, I mean, they had disagreements, and certainly this has been sort of an accusation I've heard about this box set too, that, oh, Giles is just trying to, you know, trying to rewrite history and trying to, you know, edit out any of the arguments. You know, I mean, I just get the sense that some of those stories about them constantly fighting may have been a tad overblown. I mean, I don't know. Because these takes do suggest something different. But I definitely want to say I wasn't suggesting that, oh, everything was perfect and there was zero fighting going on. I mean, I'm sure there were some with business, certainly. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
Tom, you want to take it?
For a second. By this time, they were what? John, George, and Paul had been together for what, 9 years? No, 11 years now, mm-hmm. since 57, I think they've been together. There's going to be, there's no way you can go that long and be that close together and not have any kind of, disagreement or argument. And the fact that they were able to do all this wonderful music while they were, bickering and having all this pressure. I think it just marvel. I just marvel at it. And I don't know, Ken, maybe you can, elaborate a little bit better.
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit of everything. I think one of the most enlightening things that we went through a few weeks ago at the symposium was watching that Mark Lewisohn, presentation where he took you through day by day what the Beatles were doing during the White Album sessions, and you'd be amazed at how busy they were during that time. It wasn't just working on this album. They all had their own side projects. Paul was working with Mary Hopkin. John was doing things with Yoko. George flew to Los Angeles to work on Jackie Lomax's album. You know, they were all doing so many things at the same time, and yet they had a double album that they were committed to record. So there must have been a lot of pressure for them to get all this done, in this, compressed amount of time. And, it's one of the most amazing things when you get down to it, when you study the Beatles, how they put out such high quality product and they met all the deadlines that they did.
Yeah.
For all that said about them working separately, yeah, there were times when they did that. Certain songs didn't require an entire band to begin with, but you might have had John working on mixing a song in one studio while Paul was working on one of his own songs in another studio. And a lot of that was also done to speed things up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, the truth of the matter is you have to learn from everyone involved what each one has to say, and then you get a full opinion, a more rounded opinion of it all. If you listen to what John Lennon said, he thought that like each song was one of the members' songs with a backing band. Paul said it was a tense album. Ringo quit for almost 2 weeks. And yet at the same time, he later said he really enjoyed the White Album, probably because he felt more like they were a band again. And he probably didn't feel that way as much when they were doing Sgt. Pepper. So he liked that. He always talked about the closeness of the band, certainly on a song like Your Blues. But then there's a lot of songs on the White Album that didn't have all four Beatles or had three of the four or two of the four. So it gives you that impression that they're breaking up. Well, a lot of it is, like I said, because it didn't require all four of them. Maybe one of them was out of the country at the time while they had to record something. They had to work out of necessity and what they had at the time. And so it's a little bit of everything. You've got people like Ken Scott, who, I trust his opinion. He's had a long career in the music business. He's worked with a lot of bands. And he said all bands have arguments.
Right.
It would be abnormal for a band, especially working closely together, to not have arguments, all the time. But
like Chris Thomas has said the same thing. He found it very enjoyable to work on the White Album. And George Martin left. He was already scheduled to be on holiday anyway. So it wasn't like he left because he wanted to get out of there and not work with them. Although Jeff Emmerich left for that reason. So you've got all these different factors that, you know, depending on who you ask, and, you know, everyone's telling the truth from their own perspective. You just have to listen to it all, digest it all, and, you know, get your own opinion. But one thing that doesn't lie are these recordings and how they interact with each other. And if they joked around, that was the truth. If they were having fun. You know, for all that I've heard about how John Lennon hated Obla-Di-Obla-Da, you know, at the very end of that record on the White Album, you hear him laughing. You know, so you know, it's a little bit of everything, really. It's you know, it should never be one-sided. You should never just dwell on one side of it all, or, you know, if they were having an unpleasant time. There were fun times during the White Album, just like Let It Be. There were miserable times, there were fun times. That's a band. Mm-hmm. And when you work that closely together, that's what you experience. But the thing is, by the time the White Album was happening, there were other things creeping in. Yoko was there all the time in the studio. That was something entirely new to the Beatles. It was a very private affair going into the studio. They didn't want someone there at every session and also advising what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was something that they were not used to at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and they were growing up at the same time and developing other interests. So all that was going on at the same time, and that's. But you still had this amazing body of work, all these songs, on two albums that they still managed to do. You know, during these months when they recorded it.
Yeah, really, the only moment that I can think of on this box set where, you know, you hear a little bit of tension going on, at least I did, was Mother Nature's Son, when Paul was recording a take and. You know, at the end, when he says, "Is anyone listening up there?" You know, and there was a little bit of tension with he and George Martin, but I didn't get the sense that it was like they hate each other and they're at each other's throats. I mean, you know, I think in some ways, Ken, I think you just touched on it, that they were no longer just the students. You know, that when they first. You know, started working with George Martin. George was definitely kind of the, in a way, a father figure and, you know, a teacher. Mm-hmm. Well, by this point, you know, they have a lot of, you know, songs under their belts and can now say, no, this is what I want. You know, this is how I want it to sound. So I think it was more like that. It wasn't that, you know, as I said, they were at each other's throats or anything like that. I think, and, you know, maybe there were some artistic differences between them and you know, I guess somebody just commented here. I'll show that again. That Jeff Emmerich stated at the fest that John was being rude to him, which led him to quit. And, you know, John was certainly capable of that. We know that. But I don't know. I mean, I just don't get the sense that there were these, you know, knockdown, drag out kind of things. But I just thought that was interesting when they put in that take of Mother Nature's Son. Because, I do hear a little tension there.
Mm. Well, you know, they weren't just the Fab Four anymore. They were branching out and doing so many other things while still maintaining the group. Mm-hmm. So that's something that you have to, you know, keep in mind as you're listening to this. You know, for me, whenever I listen to anything like this, I love seeing, as you said, Tom, the evolution of a song. That's what I find the most fascinating. Things that they tried that maybe didn't work, lyrics that hadn't been developed yet in certain songs, lyrics that didn't work. You know, there's a take of the continuing story of Bungalow Bill where they didn't use the all the children sing part. They hadn't come up with that yet.
Yeah.
So that must have been one of the last things that they inserted into the song. Just learning little things like that makes a big difference. Don't Pass Me By is interesting because at the very end of that take, you hear Ringo saying, "This is some friendly. This is some friendly." This is, and for years and years, I always saw that song title, and it was supposed to be a working title for "Don't Pass Me By," and I couldn't figure out why. Yeah. It was nowhere in the lyrics. And here it is at the end of the song where Ringo's actually saying it.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things, and I said this in my other podcast on Things We Said Today, I'm blown away by Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Monkey for two reasons. The Easter demo as an acoustic song really works well.
It's all like unplugged. I love it.
Yeah. Yes. Could you imagine if we had an MTV Unplugged of the Beatles and they're doing these very same songs? If you heard that arrangement of Everybody's Got Something to Hide with the riff going the way that it did, it works that way. It really does. They could have just as easily continued along that line and made an acoustic song. Mm-hmm. And then you've got an instrumental take in there where they're jamming. And they hadn't come up with that opening riff. They hadn't come up with that yet. But it's really cool to hear them jamming, and you don't get enough of that on Beatles records, especially with instrumentals. And I love that. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I'm really enjoying backing tracks now more than I ever have before. And just to hear Martha, My Dear.
Yes.
Without the brass, without the strings, and it's just Paul and George Harrison. Because George plays guitar and Paul pretty much plays everything else on that song, except for the brass and strings. And it's just those two guys. And it's really interesting to hear that. And you hear the piano all the way through, and you don't get to realize sometimes how the strings are playing at the same time as Paul's voice, and you don't hear Paul's voice as much. It might be buried in the song on the release version. I love that. I love hearing Honey Pie, that entire arrangement from George Martin. Brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. You hear all the instruments so much better when, you know, you're not singing along with it like I always do, and you're hearing Paul's vocals. You know, Savoy Truffle, I think I said. It's great to hear the horns and everything that got put into that. Oh, and on Honey Pie, you hear a little bit more of John's lead guitar work on there, which you also hear a little bit more in the mono version, but I think it's only for a few seconds. You know, fascinating things all throughout. Hey Jude, Take One. That I found really interesting because from the get-go, from the first take, it was pretty close to what they released anyway. Yeah. So they already had the song pretty much realized that early on.
Yeah, you know, you make a really good point there, Ken, because that was something that struck me even, you know, from the Easter demos too, with something like Piggies. I was shocked when, you know, hearing that demo, the way George hummed what became the harpsichord solo, and it was almost exactly what the solo ended up being. I mean, it almost verbatim. I just thought, wow. A lot of the Easter songs really didn't change much in the final version. Mm-hmm. And I can say, cheap plug, when I wrote my Michael Jackson book, that that was, like, for someone like him, that was not true. You know, you'd hear his demos and it would change a lot in the final version. So, you know, it was just amazing to me that, like, wow, these songs were almost fully realized from day one.
Right. Yeah. Even, you know, Junk and Circles. I mean, even though Circles wasn't all the way fully written, you know, lyrically, I feel like the mood of the song is kind of the, you know, I like this one a little bit better than I like from Don Trapo. Yeah, I actually like this version a little bit better. I mean, it's a moody and gloomy song, but I kind of like how he chooses to play, or what instrument he used on this one rather than, you know, on Don Trapo.
Yeah, he used an organ. I guess it sounds like an organ there, and it's got a much darker feel than the one on Don Trapo. All this stuff is fascinating.
Yeah, but going back, what you said about the, you know, the tracks when they're, you know, when they delete like the vocal, or you're just getting the backing track. I mean, we've been seeing that a lot lately, more often with these sets, you know, and I think it's an added bonus. I mean, what did we get, Sergeant Pepper? Didn't we get Within You Without You without the vocals, and all we just got was the instrumentation, and that was beautiful. And then the stuff on the Imagine set too, you know, without vocals or without brass, you know, without the orchestra, you know, I mean, I I welcome it, and I say keep, you know, I hopefully just imagine Abbey Road without vocals, or you know, the medley, you know, or you're gonna get the drum solo, you know. I think there's gonna be a lot of cool things to come if they continue these sets.
Yeah, and yeah. I might have mentioned this already, but in the case of Helter Skelter, to hear the earlier version, which you know, it's interesting. It does go on too long.
Yes. Agreed.
I think it's 12 minutes, but just to see the transformation. I mean, we did hear this version on the Beatles anthology too, but to go from that to the release version, it's such a complete change altogether. But it is interesting to hear the other take of Helter Skelter that's closer to the finished one, that's got a lot of energy to it. Revolution went through so many changes, and it's kind of interesting to think that on the Escher demo, it's kind of more of a mid-tempo, bouncy type song. Mm-hmm. Then it goes to the Revolution 1 and what was used in Revolution number 9, slower. And then you've also got this unnumbered rehearsal there, which is kind of closer to picking it up again. And then you've got the faster version that was on the single. So they went through all these different changes on Revolution, and I find that whole thing fascinating. As well as, you know, take 18 of Revolution, where you're hearing parts of it that were used in Revolution number 9.
Right.
So there's so many things to revel at in this whole thing. And one thing that I have to say, which has baffled me even more than ever since I heard the acoustic demo of While My Guitar Gently Weeps when it was on the Beatles anthology, I said to myself, why wasn't this ever released this way?
Right.
It is so absolutely gorgeous just by itself. Now, who's going to argue the release version with Eric Clapton isn't one of the Beatles' greatest recordings, too? We're not going to complain that that's the way that they released it. But, you know, if you could have had Paul doing Blackbird on acoustic guitar and John doing Julie on acoustic guitar, why couldn't they have done this with George's song? It is absolutely stunning, and it has a whole other life altogether as an acoustic song, and it works so well. It's absolutely gorgeous, and vocals, the vocal delivery from George on an acoustic song, a softer delivery makes it, you know, even, you know, more special.
It changes the tone, of the song, but in a great way.
Yeah, that's a good word. Tone. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of things here. This may seem like a minor complaint here, but for a group that went out of their way to make sure that the singles and the albums were separate entities. Well, actually, George Martin really stressed that a lot. And they were very proud of the fact that they didn't want to duplicate singles on their albums, though they did it on some of their albums.
Yeah.
You know, I would question, why do you have to have Lady Madonna and The Inner Light on here and the outtakes, as well as Across the Universe? By the way, Across the Universe, this take is wonderful.
I agree.
It's so beautiful. It's just John with an acoustic guitar. I mean, he did it perfectly. It's just a great take. It reminds me of the other ones that are stripped down of Across the Universe. But, you know, why do you need to have Lady Madonna and The Inner Light when it had nothing to do with the White Album? Was it to pad this so that we have some more? I mean, better to have more than less.
Right. Or maybe just because, you know, people complain that only a Northern Song wasn't included on the Sgt. Pepper set. So maybe they figure, okay, well, let's add this so people don't, you know. Because, you know, as fans, we're never totally happy with these products. We always find something to bitch about.
You know? That's true. That is true.
I love the Inner Light, the instrumental track. That was really stunning to listen to. I mean, I had kind of a similar reaction to it the way I did for the Sgt. Pepper set with Within You, Without You, how that remix just really fleshed out that song. With the Inner Light, in this case, as I said, it's just the instrumental track, but remix, and really just gorgeous. And I heard all kinds of, you know, accents that I'd never noticed before, and that was true with many of the songs, and on the remixes too. I'd hear, it was so exciting, you know, you'd hear a little vocal or you'd hear a little guitar part and you'd say, I've never noticed that before, you know?
Right,
great. That's stuff.
That's what the remixes do, you know. In particular, like right now, my big thing is Your Blues.
Yes.
And just hearing Ringo's drums were just outstanding on that. I appreciate it much more so now than ever before. Long, long, long as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and also there's the outtake of Dear Prudence where you get to hear Paul's drumming more mm-hmm. on that song. Yeah. So, you know, there's so many highlights here. Anyway, we were going to talk about George Harrison because November 29th marked the anniversary of his passing in 2001. So I thought that we'd kind of close the show with some thoughts from us about what George Harrison has meant to us, or maybe pinpoint specific songs that mean something to you that you really appreciate. Every now and then we like to do something in all of our shows and all of our work where we talk about underappreciated songs, maybe, or maybe you might want to talk about some of the well-known songs that you love so much. But what would you like to say about George Harrison, Kit, if you want to talk about the songs or anything else?
Well, you know, it's first of all, I can't believe it's been 17 years since his passing. I was shocked when I heard that number. You know, I just always marvel at not only, you know, he just had such a broad range of styles in his music, but I also love how he would really play with his lyrics. I mean, he would, you know, be funny with, you know, When We Was Fab or, you know, or this song. And, you know, I mean, he could, of course, be extremely funny. But I love some of, like, I'd Have You Anytime. And I mean, I just love how you can interpret that as either romantic or spiritual. You right. know, and he kind of left it up to you to decide. And I, you know, if not for you, I mean, you could, you know, there's so many songs that you could definitely interpret, you know, either way. And I just thought that was so clever. And I have to say, too, and some of you watching may have seen some of my talks before, so you're going to say, oh, God, here she goes again. 33 and a third. I adore that album. Right. I mean, All Things Must Pass is number one for me, but boy, 33 and a third is a close number two. I mean, you know, it just from start to finish, you know, it goes from a little funky with Woman Don't You Cry For Me to being the R&B person. Of course, I love Pure Smokey. How could I not? you know, to funny with, you know, this song, A Cracker Box Palace, and then Learning How to Love You. Again, another example of spiritual or religious. I just marvel at his versatility, you know, and really 33 and a third is just one example of that on that album. So, yeah.
Mm. Tom, how about you?
Well, you know, as somebody that loves sarcasm and loves being a smartass, I've tended to, you know, enjoy, you know, a bunch of George, you know, throughout his career. You know, obviously, I came up to being a George fan right around the time of Cloud Nine, so. I mean, what a great album to be introduced to George Harrison by, and then plus getting the, you know, the Best of Dark Horse, and then, you know, then going into the, you know, the Traveling Wilburys stuff. Really, really, really cool time for me to discover George. You know, what I like to talk about, I mean, obviously there's the music, but I think a lot of people forget a lot of times about his, you know, his TV and movie appearances and you know, stuff he did with film, like his handmade films. And, you know, I have seen quite a few of the movies that they produce, stuff like Mona Lisa with Nell and I, and Life of Brian, of course, they did with the Pythons, you know, and then you got Time Bandits, which is probably the greatest, in my opinion, one of the greatest children movie of all time. I mean, it's just, you know, those kind of movies just don't get made anymore. I mean, if you've seen that, you know what I'm talking about. Mm. You know, and then plus, you know, the little TV appearances, you know, with the Ruddles, I mean, that was great. His performance with Paul Simon on Saturday Night Live is a thing of beauty. Which, trivia alert, do you know what day that was recorded, Ken Michaels?
Yeah, I don't.
Well, was it Thanksgiving Day of 1976?
Well, it was recorded on the Thursday. It was not recorded. They did not. They did not do that live.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, so that was really special. Their two voices, you know, matched.
Oh God. Yeah.
You know, beautifully. And Kit, you said on your program, that would have been great if those two did an album together.
Oh, what a lost opportunity.
Beautiful. And I would imagine it would have been all acoustic too. And I mean, then their voices matched so wonderfully together. You know,
I've always wanted that myself. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've wanted Paul McCartney to work with Paul Simon, you know.
Right. Yeah. You know, the pirate songs from Rutland TV, you know, when you think he's going to do, you know, My Sweet Lord, and he goes into, you know, the pirate song, you know, that's just wonderful. His little appearance that he did in the Shanghai surprise that pretty much ruined Handmade Films.
Yeah.
you know, terrible movie, but, you know, at the time, you know, Sean Penn and Madonna, where could you go wrong at that time? You know?
Oh, they were the hottest couple around, absolutely.
Right. Who knew that the movie that they did together was going to suck? But there it is.
but the songs were good.
The songs were good.
And that's the thing. He played a singer, or lounge singer in the movie, and that was really cool to see. You know, his cameo on The Simpsons was great. His appearance on I Won't Back Down video from Tom Petty, you know, was cool. And you also had Ringo in there as well. But more importantly, also the really cool thing was the interviews that he did, you know, throughout his, especially in the 80s and 90s. You know, the last interview he did for VH1 when he had Ravi Shankar on there, and you didn't know that this was going to be his last, last, you know, interview. And and then, you know, that what he does, what, All Things Must Pass live. And
he also did Eddie Road,
exactly, right. And there's a really cool interview, I'll end with this. There's a really cool interview right around the time of Give My Regards to Broad Street, where he's being interviewed about Paul doing that film and whatever, and then how he had said, well, you know, did you give him any advice for that? And he was like, well, I told him not to really do all, you know, do everything yourself, you know, you know, give some stuff to other people to do. And then the other question is, well, what do you think about him redoing, you know, the Beatles songs? And then his answer is, well, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't have any more good songs of his own, you know? So.
Ouch.
Yeah. So there's the smart ass that I love so much, about George.
I might be confusing that interview. He did one, I think this was more the time when Cloud Nine came out, and he was interviewed on the Canadian equivalent of MTV. And there was a really young guy who interviewed him, who I think was a little, you know, starstruck. And he was saying, because at the time, Paul was saying in the press that he maybe would like to write with George. And asked George the question. He said, well, what do you think about Paul saying, you know, he'd like to write with you? And George said, maybe it's because he hasn't come up with anything good lately. And it's like, and this guy on MTV is like, did he just say that? So it was really funny, you know, to be in that position, you know. But but that's the great thing. I mean, George was very blunt when he wanted to be. And he's one of the few people who could tell off Paul or other people and not care, you know, because he could do that because they're friends.
Right.
Yeah. But there's so many wonderful things I could say about George Harrison. There's so many angles I could take. But I would like to echo, and thank you for saying it, Kit, how versatile and diverse he was in his music. And I don't think George Harrison ever gets the credit for that.
I agree.
You know, he's written some of the greatest love songs of all time. Obviously Something. Some of the songs from his solo career, which weren't hits at all, like That Is All, is one of the greatest love songs ever written to me. Your Love Is Forever, Dark Sweet Lady, songs like those.
Yep.
Learning How to Love You, which I mentioned on Facebook, is one of my favorites of his. He's done Out and Out Rockers, Wah-Wah, Devil's Radio. He's done all kinds of things. Obviously, the Indian music, the rockabilly music that he was such a big fan of with Carl Perkins and music in that style. He did Oriental type music, you know, like Breath Away from Heaven, which he used in Shanghai Surprise. He liked a lot of the pre-rock and roll stuff, Hoagie Carmichael. In Shanghai Surprise, he did that song, Hottest Gong in Town. And he was very natural doing that. Very 1920s, 1930s, just like Paul does it. George did it well too, you know. And then there's blues, you know, whether you want to count For You Blue in there.
you know, there's so many styles that he did and did very well. And then you can even go into all the different ways that he's written lyrics. Very beautiful lyrics for love songs, spiritual songs, you know, prophetic songs in his lyrics. You know, there's a lot of things to admire George Harrison for, but I really wish that people would be more aware of, you know, how diverse he was. If you only hear just the hits of George, you may not get that impression.
Because you're missing out.
You know, the comical side, like you said, Kit, something like When It Was Fab, this song, Cracker Box Palace is a funny one. Mm-hmm. You know, I Was So Young When I Was Born. You know, to start off the lyrics like that, you know. But there's so many different sides to George, and musically and as a person. He's a fascinating guy. You know, the same person who could be very comical one minute can be so serious the next.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, kind of like Paul Simon in a way, if you think about it. But, you know, there's so many fascinating sides to George Harrison. The same guy that loved something as peaceful and serene as gardening also loved race car driving. Something as dangerous as that. You know, there's a lot of sides to George. Multifaceted person.
That's for sure.
You know, he lives on inside me every single day.
Yeah.
Me too. So
before we go, let's give our contact information to everybody. Let's start with you, Kit.
Okay, well, you can reach me at my website, which I'm typing in right now, and you can also find me on Facebook. Just look me up. I'm my writer page is Kit O'Toole's Keynotes. Just look that up, Kit O'Toole's Keynotes. There's my website, kitotool.com, and I'm going to be back in the very near future with new editions of Deep Beatles, Deep Soul, and my annual gift guide, and I'll tell you, this is going to be a long article. a lot came out this year. I mean, the list is getting longer and longer, so this may be a book, you know. I mean, and Bottomless Soul will also be coming back, and you can check out my Facebook page for all the information of when and where and all that good stuff.
Okay, Tom, how about you?
Well, you can always find me on my, you know, Facebook. I'm Tom Hunyadi. You can look me up and we can talk there. You can also find us on our Facebook page, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. You can also email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. You know, I try to, you know, post things about Paul McCartney all the time. I love to have conversations about Paul on our Facebook page. We just released our episode on Egypt Station finally, so you can you know, hear our thoughts of, you know, Egypt Station after 2 months or more or longer. It's been what, 2.5 months now, maybe.
September.
Yeah. So we did that. We're going to be working on my part two of my interview with Vic Garbarini from the McCartney interview from way back in 1980. So we'll have that ready to go by the end of the year or early next year. So
nice.
So yeah, exciting things coming up.
All right. And as for myself, Ken Michaels, you can reach me at my email address, which is everylittlething@att.net. If you want to listen to that show, and there is one website based out of Germany where many of my archive shows, this is my syndicated radio show, Every Little Thing, you can find it at globaltexanchronicles.com. Click on the tab Beatles, and you'll see a whole bunch of my shows there. It's Beatle music, solo Beatle music, themes, very different themes. Oddities, interviews that I've done, it's there in that show. You could also catch my other Beatles program, a podcast called Things We Said Today, which I co-host with Darren DeVivo and Alan Kozen. That's on podbean.com, just like we are. And also the audio of that you can find on YouTube. And on my website, kenmichaelsradio.com, I now have a special contest running right now to win the brand new book from Ken Mansfield. Here it is.
The roof.
Ken is the the former U.S. manager for Apple Records. I just did an interview with him, which you can listen to on the website on interviews page 4. And if you want to win this book, the special contest runs this week. It ends on December 8th. I'd go there right now. It's very easy to win. Find out how, you find out all the instructions how to win on my website. There's also a Beatles trivia and games page where you can win one of 9 prizes every single week. This book is on there, The Roof, as is this other book. I don't even know. This is book. I don't know.
It's supposed to be okay.
I don't know. Songs We Were Singing by Kid O'Toole. Okay. I don't know. I just saw this laying around in the house.
She just dropped it off at your doorstep. She's throwing them around like a paper route.
That's right. There you go. I'm shameless. Absolutely.
And I still have copies of Egypt Station to win, the 2-CD version of Imagine, all kinds of great stuff. Good old Frida. The DVD. I have one copy to give away. So that's all on my website, KenMichaelsRadio.com. Don't forget, as I said earlier in the show, we're going to be starting to do this show Monday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the first show of which will be a week from this Monday, which is the 17th of December. After that, it'll be the first Monday of the new year. Okay. And Ken Womack will be joining us. And we're sorry he couldn't be here this time, but we will be very happy to welcome him back on the 17th. So this has been a great show.
Indeed.
So, yeah, a lot of fun. Thank you.
And don't forget, you can also find us on Podbean, and we are also on Twitter at TalkMoreTalk1, and also you can email us at TalkMoreSoloTalk@gmail.com. We love to hear from you. We love your feedback, and thanks to all who took part in the discussion tonight. It was a good chat.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. Tell everyone you know that's a fan of the Beatles about this show, and we appreciate your support.
I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.